Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Monday, July the 23rd. Welcome to Africa Link, live from our DW studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Abubakar Jallo. Thank you for joining us on air in our DW Africa page. That's on Facebook.
Coming up, China's President Xi Jinping pledges win-win cooperation with Africa as he wraps up his two-day visit in Rwanda. President Kagame praises China for treating Africa as an equal.
This presents new opportunities for Rwanda, the region, and our continent as a whole. In many areas that are very important to us, in infrastructure, civil health, capacity building, agriculture, very critical areas.
But in contrast to what President Kagame is saying about China, Kenyans are protesting against some 5,000 Chinese engineers who are hired to work in Kenya.
For people who are working right now under the Chinese, they are not protected. So the Chinese can bring whomever they want, even to do just normal manual labor, which is what is happening and why people are protesting against them.
Further aboard, U.S. President Donald Trump and Iranian President exchange war of words as tensions between the two countries increases.
Well, these are just some of the stories we have, plus our social media responses. But first, let's listen to the stories that are making news around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Chinese President Xi Jinping has arrived in Rwanda, becoming the first Chinese president to visit the East African nation. Xi was welcomed by President Paul Kagame, who said the two leaders would discuss boosting bilateral relations and strengthening economic ties. Xi will then head to the Indian Ocean island nation of Mauritius ahead of a BRICS economy summit starting Wednesday in South Africa, where he'll seek to deepen trade ties with emerging markets. In Nigeria, authorities have blamed the militant Boko Haram group on a deadly suicide bombing that killed at least 8 people and injured 7 others. The bombing, which exploded outside a mosque in Borno State, comes after 22 Boko Haram extremist leaders and fighters were arrested for their alleged ties to more than 50 suicide bombings and for the mass kidnapping of Chibok schoolgirls. In Germany, Foreign Minister Heiko Maas has met with new British Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt during his inaugural visit to Berlin. Speaking at a joint press conference, Hunt warned of a Brexit crash if talks don't lead to agreements.
There is now a very real risk of a Brexit no deal by accident. And this is because I think that many people in the EU are thinking that they just have to wait long enough and Britain will blink, and that's not going to happen.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Swedish authorities have warned of an extreme risk of fresh forest fires across the Nordic country as fires and heat waves continue to inundate the country and hit northern Europe and elsewhere. Britta Rammenberg with the Swedish Civil Contingencies Agency said they're doing everything they can to stop the wildfires from spreading.
We're fighting around the fires, making fire breaks and clearing big areas to reduce the ability for the fire to spread. That's where the focus is, both from the air and on the ground.
Resurserna både från luften och på marken.
Scorching temperatures and wildfires have also overwhelmed much of Europe, including Norway, Finland, Latvia, and Greece. In Japan, at least 10 people have died from heat strokes, and more than 2,000 were taken to hospital as the country hit a record high 41.1 degrees Celsius in the northwest of the country. High temperatures have killed more than 40 people so far this year in Japan, and 21,000 people have been sent to hospital due to extreme weather conditions in the country. And finally, Germany's Football Association has rejected accusations of racism after Turkish-German football star Mesut Ozil announced his retirement from international football. The Arsenal midfielder said he felt disrespected over his Turkish roots and claimed the Football Association had unfairly signaled him out for Germany's first-round World Cup exit. Turkey's sports minister and other MPs supported his resignation. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
This is DW's Africa Link program, and my name is Abubakar Jalo.
With me, Zipporah Nyambura, and of course, a warm welcome to our listeners on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Alice Chusa saying hello from Indiana, USA, Don Bucci, and of course, we have many more listeners. Thank you for keeping it Africa Link.
Definitely. Thank you, guys. Now, China's President Xi Jinping has pledged to strengthen economic ties with Africa by offering what he called a win-win cooperation and genuine development partnership. President Xi was speaking today in Kigali, Rwanda, after signing 15 bilateral trade deals that will strengthen trade ties between the two countries.
It is Jinping's first Chinese visit to Rwanda. Rwanda, one of Africa's growing economies, had trade with China worth 134 million euros last year, making Beijing one of its largest trade partners. I talked to our correspondent in Kigali, Nasra Bishumba. And of course, I wanted to know first, what exactly does China want from Rwanda?
The Chinese generally wouldn't have anything that they would find interesting in Rwanda, because Rwanda is not necessarily a rich country in terms of minerals. It doesn't have much to offer an economic giant like China. However, Rwanda has Paul Kagame. President Paul Kagame is the current chairperson of the African Union. He's a man of influence. He's a man who has managed to bring everyone else in the rest of Africa on the same table to negotiate how to move Africa forward. So I think the Chinese are looking at him as someone who is going to connect them to the rest of Africa, that like someone who is going to link them directly to anyone that they would like to do business with without very many issues.
And what is the feeling among the Rwandans? Are they happy about it, or are they a little bit held back?
Rwandans are usually suspicious of everyone who is foreign. So for the Chinese, it's mixed feelings. Some people are wondering if Rwanda is really going to reap big from the negotiations that have been going on, or if the Chinese are just going to milk the country of the little that it has and move on to the next African country, because the Chinese don't generally have a good reputation with the East Africans. So it's just generally what you'd call mixed reactions.
What can you tell us? What were the key issues in today's meeting between the two leaders?
The two leaders discussed several issues, generally around cooperation. There was the signing of 15 agreements between government officials from both sides. The Chinese president talked about how keen he is to really work with the government of Rwanda. And he was saying that if this relationship works out as they plan it to, both countries are going to benefit. Take a listen.
I am here this time with the aim to consolidate and to work together with Mr. President to plan for the future of our bilateral relations and the friendly cooperation between China and Africa, and to see to it that our mutually beneficial cooperation can yield more fruit.
The President of Rwanda generally also said the same, and he said this is an opportunity for countries like Rwanda to work with big economic giants. Take a listen.
This presents new opportunities for Rwanda, the region, and our continent as a whole, in many areas that are very important to us, in infrastructure, city health, capacity building, agriculture, education, very critical areas.
That is Rwandan President Paul Kagame. That was our reporter Nasra Bishumba.
Now, quite in contrast to what people are saying about the Chinese. Now, Kenyans are protesting against the arrival of some 5,000 engineers from China who were hired to build another railway in the country.
The protests are planned as Chinese President Xi Jinping was concluding his meeting, as we just said, in Rwanda and was headed for Mauritius.
Now, Andrew Asike has been telling me more about the reasons for this planned protest.
This is because Kenya has signed bilateral agreements with China, which are actually favoring the Chinese. The Chinese get to employ whomever they want. They are not working under unions. In Kenya, we only work under unions. But for people who are working right now under the Chinese, they are not protected. So the Chinese can bring whomever they want, even to do just normal manual labor. They can bring people from China, which is what is happening and why people are protesting against them.
Andrew, what do we know about this contract that Kenya actually signed with the Chinese government, and what provisions does it make for employers in Kenya to work in this project?
Well, what I know about the contract is that the railway line will be managed by the Chinese for a period of around 10 years. Then it will be handed over to Kenyans. Now the problem is, when it's still in the hands of the Chinese, they are doing everything as per their laws. This includes terms when it comes to working conditions, who they get to employ, when they employ them. If they are going to maybe let go of staff, they will decide this on their own without actually talking to their Kenyan counterparts.
But what is the grievance, really? Is it about the Chinese engineers who are coming to build this standard gauge railway, or is it about the handing over of the operations of this railway line when it is finished to the Chinese who are bringing their own staff to run it?
Well, Abu, right now it's a little bit of everything. The other day it was just about being included into some of these jobs. Right now the engineers have also stood up because they are not being hired. I can say when other Kenyans, maybe people who are usually used to doing manual labor, hear that the engineers are protesting, they go join them because they believe that the more we are, maybe the higher our voice will be and maybe the government will try and do something.
That was Andrew Wasike speaking to me from Nairobi.
And of course, we had an interesting discussion on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And we know Kenya owes China more than it owes the World Bank. 72% of Kenya's external debt, to be precise. Every Angolan owes China $745. And we ask, do Africans really own their continent?
And before we give you responses, 72% of Kenya's external debt is actually from China, which is about $50 billion. Anyways, Kelechi Vincent said, this is what Professor Lubumba was saying at the Mandela 100 lecture. Africa is on the second recolonization by China. They are willingly giving out loans to indebted generations of Africans to come.
Julian Soti says, the Europeans have taken so much resources from Africa, now China is taking the rest. Leaders without thinking cap.
And Arinze Ehirim says, China is more fair to Africa than the Westerners that only bring war to us to kill ourselves.
So, lots of mixed reactions. And you can also contribute by going to our Facebook page, DW Africa. Now, U.S. President Donald Trump has warned Iran risked dire consequences, the like of which few throughout history have suffered before, if the Islamic Republic made more threats against the United States.
Now, Trump's words, which he spelled out in capital letters in the late-night Twitter message, came hours after Iranian President Hassan Rouhani told him that hostile policies towards Iran could lead to the mother of all wars. More in this report by Crispin Wakidale.
Trump's comments come in the context of a barrage of speeches and online communications meant to foment unrest and pressure Iran to end its nuclear program and its support of militant groups, according to U.S. officials. In his response, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani warned the U.S. not to stir any war.
We do not want to go into war with them, but they must understand well that war with Iran is the mother of all wars. They have to understand it very well that peace with Iran is mother of all peace.
German Foreign Ministry spokesman Christopher Burger called on the two sides to seek dialogue instead of issuing threats.
We support dialogue and talks, and we call on all sides, this clearly applies to the Iranian side, to exercise restraint and rhetorical disarmament. I think that threats of military force are never helpful, and I think that particularly in the tense situation in the Middle East, this is not a helpful means of discourse.
Iran has faced increased U.S. pressure and possible sanctions since Trump's decision in May to withdraw the United States from a 2015 international agreement over its nuclear program.
Crispin Mwakidil. You are listening to DW's Africa Link program, and my name is Abubakar Jalo.
With me, Zipporah Nyambura. And of course, thank you to our listeners on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We can see you right there with many comments. We read them whenever we can. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, why malaria remains a major health problem in Malawi.
Malaria is the number one killer disease in Malawi because we have so many factors. One of it is the geographical position of Malawi, because we have so many streams, so many swamps.
And on our sports segment, we will focus today on the ongoing debacle between Germany's football team player, that's Mesut Ozil, and the German FA. But first, Zimbabwe next week Monday goes to its first general elections without its founding leader, Robert Mugabe, who resigned last November following days of protest against his treatment of fellow ruling party members and failure to arrest a collapsing economy.
As DW's Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, 8 months later, nothing much has changed economic-wise, and economists say all candidates campaigning for Zimbabwe's number one job have not laid down what the South African nation needs to get out of its economic hole.
I am at the Harare Central Police Station Market, right in the center of the capital city. This is the hub of economic activities in Zimbabwe. Most of the businesses on these streets involve clothes, food, money exchanges, and many petty trading. This is the economy as many Zimbabweans know it, a remnant of former President Robert Mugabe's 30-year rule. Economists have put unemployment rate at an estimated 85%. 33-year-old Violet Marapara, a former clerk at a computer company that is now closed, is selling second-hand clothes, which she imports from neighboring Mozambique. She has her expectations post-July 30th elections.
After the elections, we just want a better life for Zimbabweans.
After the elections, we want a better life for Zimbabweans. As people who live in Zimbabwe, who sell but do not have places to sell our goods, we want to have places built for us so that we can be free to sell and to do business and look for money. Business is very low, and we're trying to make ends meet selling here and there, but the economy is bad.
So that you go and buy stuff for sale.
Marapara is not alone feeling the almost 3-year-old cash crisis in Zimbabwe, which makes some people spend nights in queues hoping that they will get cash the following morning. So does Collins Chigwagwa, who runs a barber shop in the former middle income earners suburb of Waterfalls.
What we want to change after the elections are money issues. Now we are using three forms of money. We have US dollars, bond notes, mobile money transfer. The money is disturbing us in purchasing goods because bond notes have their own charges, which are different to mobile money transfer and US dollar. After elections, we should use only one type of money which is good for us. Mario.
This Southern African country is holding its first election without its founding leader, President Mugabe. The 94-year-old gave in to a military pressure with Zimbabwe's economy on its knees, so to speak. In addition to the cash crisis, Zimbabwe needs to improve its foreign reserves, which government says depends on a basket of multiple foreign currencies after it abandoned its worthless Zimbabwean dollar in 2009. Businessman Gilbert Tangwara Jawanda says whoever wins the elections, the recent legalization of farming marijuana by President Mnangagwa's administration is the answer to Zimbabwe's foreign currency shortages and will immediately breathe life into the country's economy after the July 30th election.
They should look at the marijuana cannabis business. Because you see, if you look at the cannabis business, it is the in thing. It is the business of the moment. It does quite a lot of things. The advantage of growing cannabis in Zimbabwe is like we can forego cotton, since you know cotton uses quite a lot of chemicals, fertilizers, and as compared to cannabis.
Dr. Ntlela, an economist at Zimbabwe Consult, says the next government of Zimbabwe must ensure that international investment feels safe in Zimbabwe.
International investors come to a country where they see that the government is clean, the government is transparent, and the house as a country or the state has been cleaned up, and they come. In fact, you don't need to invite them. They will actually be here knocking at our doors and actually implementing things and assisting us.
And that report was compiled by Columbus Mavunga in Zimbabwe.
Health check.
Malaria is a major health problem in Malawi. In fact, it remains the number one killer after HIV and AIDS in the country, according to the World Health Organization, WHO. Last year alone, there were more than 6 million cases of malaria reported in health facilities, marking about a third of the total population.
Now, the government has put up its fight against the disease as a national priority and is now advising people to register for the free mosquito distribution program as one way of curbing the disease. The distribution of mosquito nets will begin in September this year, which will benefit at least 3.5 million households. From Blantyre, George Mahango has the details.
Malaria has always been a setback to the country's economy and the health system. Health authorities say at least 40% of patients admitted in various private and public hospitals are malaria patients. The Free Mosquito Nets Distribution Mass Campaign aims to enhance the fight against the disease amidst worrying statistics from the National Malaria Control Program warning it is killing 10 people every day. James Kachere explains.
Yes, it's true that malaria is the number one killer disease in Malawi because we have so many factors. One of it is the way, I should say, geographical position of Malawi, because we have so many streams, so many swamps, rivers, including Lake Malawi. So you see, the communities most of the times are not convinced that these are the places where mosquitoes breed. So you will see that in many areas we have so many population of mosquitoes. And this is why many people suffer from malaria.
Plans to distribute free 10 million mosquito nets have been received positively. Many, like Martha Gondwe, a mother of four, say the nets are often unaffordable to many.
I've been a victim of the disease, likewise my children. So as a mother, this sounds good because mosquito nets are expensive and the initiative is likely to benefit all of us. However, this should be an annual process so that the disease is contained.
Pong Kandawire is a health expert who has worked at Malawi's major referral hospital known as Queen Elizabeth Central Hospital in Blantyre. He says apart from giving them free nets, people should be encouraged to use them daily and appropriately.
You may wish to know that malaria is endemic in Malawi and one of the major public health problems in the country. The 2013 Health Management Information System estimated that Malawi experiences about 4 million malaria episodes annually. I'm therefore of the opinion that free distribution of insecticide-treated nets will go a very long way in reducing malaria prevalence among under 5 children and pregnant women who are most affected by the disease. However, deliberate efforts need to be put in place to make sure that everyone who has received these nets, you know, is using it. Besides that, abuse of the same by, among other things, using nets as fishing tools, more especially in lakeshore areas, is also prevented.
The free mosquito net distribution campaign is done in partnership with a leading charitable organization, World Vision International. Among other measures Malawi has put up to keep rising cases of malaria are spreading homesteads with pesticides and giving preventive tablets to pregnant mothers.
George Muhango with that report.
Now, German footballer Mesut Ozil has received mixed reactions from German lawmakers following his decision to quit the national football team. The fiasco started on May 13 when Ozil and fellow German footballer İlkay Gündoğan met Turkey's president Recep Tayyip Erdogan in London during a charity gala event.
Now, both players posed for pictures with Erdogan, who they presented with shirts of their respective clubs, Arsenal and Manchester City, the latter of which was signed "For My President" by City star Gündoğan.
Now, those photos were released on social media by the Erdogan's campaign team a day before Germany's squad was announced for the Football World Cup. Chuck Penfold joins me in the studio to analyze this particular saga.
I think it's just been really badly mishandled by the DFB, and also to some extent, I have to say, by Özil himself, because İlkay Gündoğan came out very quickly afterwards and issued a statement saying this wasn't meant as a political statement and, you know, still stressing his...
So basically that delay that Özil didn't come out and make a statement against it, this is what is causing this backlash now.
I think that's been a lot of it, because Gündoğan actually did something worse, I think, in my mind. They both gave jerseys to the Turkish president, and Gündoğan wrote for my
to my president,
and the first thing that came to me was, you know, that shouldn't be your president. You're playing for Germany. It should be Frank-Walter Steinmeier. But he came out and explained it, and the heat was pretty much off of him. The heat was really on Özil, I think, and he's a quiet guy. He doesn't like to talk in public very much, but he just refused. And then he came out with this long statement yesterday in English, which I thought was a bit of not the best thing to do if you're talking to Germans. I know he's talking to a global audience too. But if it's racism, there's definitely racism in this country as there is in any other country. Some of the abuse he's been subjected to is definitely based on racism. But whether the DFB, the German Football Association, is racist, I wouldn't go that far.
Now, the German Football Association, the DFB, has just released a statement reacting to Ozil's announcement that he's resigning from the national team. What's contained in that statement?
Well, it's a very political statement, I would say, as probably was to be expected. They've come out and thanked Mesut Ozil for his 92 games in the national team jersey and said, you know, they're thankful for his service. They would have liked him to continue, but they regretfully respect his decision. So quite a political statement to try to save their reputation.
But this is quite ridiculous, actually, because the president of the DFB, that Reinhard Grindel, and the manager of the football team, Oliver Bierhoff, they basically come up very, very strongly against Ozil after this tournament, after the national team performed so badly at the World Cup. Do you actually think that they're trying to use Ozil as a scapegoat for their dismal performance?
Kind of looks like it, doesn't it? It was interesting. Today I put a chronology on the sports page of different statements that were made over the course of this whole scandal affair, whatever you want to call it. And it's funny, Grindel came out immediately after they had the photo taken and was quite, you know, critical of them. But a day later, he came back and said, okay, you know, let's not get too carried away here. You know, so he went back and forth. And then Bierhoff, after the tournament, well, first of all, before the tournament, during the training camp, he a couple of times tried to say, look, the issue is over. We've talked to the players. It's a dead issue. But of course, he can't do that because as a free press are going to ask questions. And then after the tournament, as you say, he came out and made a statement in which he said, okay, this affair sort of hung over the players a little bit, and maybe we should have not thought about not taking him with us. He revised that, and then also a day later saying, no, I never meant to say anything like that. My words have been misinterpreted. And then Grindel came out around the same time, a little bit later, I think, saying Ozil's got to come out and make a statement and clarify things. And everybody interpreted it as they were making him the scapegoat. Whether that was their intention, I don't know, but that's the way it looked, and that's the way everybody understood it.
DW Sports guru Chuck Penfold.
Yeah, and of course, after that discussion, we head back to our top story about China. And it's just signed some deals with Rwanda and, of course, its presence in Africa, which many are talking about on our social media pages. Like one Abone Greg, who says, China's presence in Africa is selfish, given that they don't transfer competence and technology.
And we have another response here from Reverend John tin shoe. He says the problem is that African countries, some still do not have a computerized system permitting international businesses.
And to wrap up, Kim Asharia says China is the Africa's best supporter when it comes to infrastructure and development.
Thank you for all those responses. It's been a pleasure. My name is Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. Bye for now.